The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Swansea win with dire performance. Arsenal lose with same. While at White Hart Lane, it's wanderers for the title after Spurs outfoxed by Wolves. Downstairs, meanwhile, Blackburn move out of drop zone while Rangers take their place as about face from ours. Leaves them ours about face. All that plus Spain. Ooh, Betis for Barca as Catalan survive scaring countdown to another Clasico. In Italy, it's the Milan derby and John Barnes, Tony Adams and Peter Reid. Sounds like a project. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Barry, Glendenning, that confused look on your face...
Yes.
...means you're intrigued by what's in store today. Don't worry, because enlightenment is very much around the corner at the hands of Paul McInnes.
Hi.
And Tom Lartz.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hey, big day for you, eh?
Today?
Yeah, well, big weekend.
I was looking after John Ashdown's cats, so yes.
Oh,
yeah.
All right, then.
But we don't like each other already. That's been
right.
Established.
We were talking about a girl with two pussies the other day. How many cats does John have?
He has two as well.
Really?
Yeah.
That's extraordinary coincidence. so much to talk about this weekend. Let's begin with the game of the weekend, which was...
Liverpool Stoke.
No, it wasn't Liverpool Stoke. It's Swansea Arsenal.
All right,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Swansea Arsenal, Tom Lutz.
It was a brilliant game. I think there was... a slight danger with Henry's return against Leeds. It was going to paper over some of the imperfections in Arsenal's game, but that was swiftly ripped off.
What about the perfections in Swansea's game, Tom?
It disproved the theory that British players can't play a possession game. And a lot of these players from Swansea are players that have played their entire career in the Championship, and then they, you know, came up and kept the ball better than Arsenal did, and that was kind of crucial to the game. And they, more importantly, they didn't give it away. And two of Arsenal's goals that Arsenal conceded with them just kind of giving the ball away quite easily.
Who gave the ball away for the Swansea winner? It was from kickoff. It was Thierry Henry.
Yeah, he did some weird karate kick, and it landed at a Swansea player's.
Yeah. Arsenal, look, note here, they've got five fullbacks out, is that right? Mitigating circumstances. If only the transfer window was open, they wouldn't have to play Mikel at left back.
I know, it's crazy. Not that the fullbacks were to blame for them losing yesterday.
Well, I think they were, actually, because Mikel Ignasi's, there was a big expanse of space in behind him where he was filling in for left back. I mean, Michael Cox makes the point in his tactics column today for The Guardian that Wenger probably hasn't bought a left back because he's got four who are going to be fit soon.
But they always get injured, don't they? That's the thing. He's got all these numbers, but they have a remarkably persistent injury problem at Arsenal where people come back and they go out again. I mean, it's Vermaelen again. Just as when you thought he'd come back and inject a bit of stability into the side, out injured again.
You do start to wonder whether that's just incredible bad luck or is there some problem with... I don't know, their medical staff.
Well, you remember the start of the season, they had that massive rash of injuries which really put the kibosh on them, and they were drifting down at the bottom end of the table. And after Christmas, they're now about, 4 points off the top four again. So one or two problems there. But Swansea.
Yeah, I mean, I think the points that Tom was making are totally right. And I think one thing about the squad is that it's largely quite young. So they've been, over the course of various managers, starting with Martinez, they've been able to imbue the squad with an attitude towards playing. But you've got to have confidence. And they're playing little triangles in their 18-yard box. It's been swarmed around by some of the most apparently potent attacking players in the league. And they're pulling it off.
Right?
Well,
but
not
Andre
Arshavin. Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, by the end, you know, they had five tricky off the number nine forwards on the pitch, didn't they? And still, Swansea were playing their game.
Yeah, and Swansea weren't booting away in panic at the end when Arsenal were going forward. They were still keeping possession, which was impressive as well.
All right, was their biggest win yet, says Brendan Rodgers, and they are now 10th in the table, just one place behind
the mighty Norwich.
The mighty. Mm. Norwich, what a year. Is this a vintage season for promoted sides?
I think what in Rodgers and Lambert, you've got two very good managers.
Because a lot of people were saying, for example, last week, Blackpool were in the same position a year ago that Norwich a week ago. You know, and what happened to them? But there isn't any sense with Norwich and Swansea of a big flaw in the side that's waiting to catch up with them.
Well, there is, in that you look at Norwich and you think, well, there is, because we haven't kept a clean sheet all season. And then you look at Swansea, and up until yesterday was the first time I think they scored 3 goals in a game. They kept the clean sheets, but did they score enough goals? So you could say that. However, I do think both managers are canny. Both managers, I think Rodgers has his system, and he knows how that operates, and he's brought the players. He's continually adding more players to play in that system. And Lambert is just, he will do anything to get a point or 3 points, and he has lots of different ways of going about getting it. We've played good football this season, we've played hoofball, we've played pretty, we've played dirty, we've mixed it up. And, Saturday we played a game where we, unlike us really, we were absorbed attack for most of the game. Did it reasonably well, gave away a penalty, but that aside, did it reasonably well, and hit them on the counter-attack twice and scored 2 goals.
Yeah, at Hawthorns.
Indeed.
Yeah, big win, though.
Yeah, a big win. I personally, I don't want to tempt fate, but I don't think Swansea and Norwich are going to go down.
No. Doesn't look that way, does it? There you go.
I'd agree. I mean, what's interesting is the way the strikers and the teams that came up are performing. The forwards, Danny Graham, Steve Morrison, Helgeson, Nathan Dyer, Grant Holt are all scoring goals and playing well, and a lot better than many of their considerably more expensive and better-known counterparts at other clubs.
How much of that do you think is down to attitude and psychology? Because for me, all these...
Are you saying hunger, Paul?
Well, yes, on the one hand, and also willingness to be instructed.
Right.
So that, you know, Morrison is always at the back post waiting for the ball to be lumped onto his noggin, and he puts it away. Danny Graham is making all these kind of clever runs in and out of the box. They get coached, whereas sometimes you kind of think with players maybe like, say, Jermaine Defoe or something, they know what they want to do and they know what they're good at, and they're going to do it regardless of what you tell them to do.
Mm. All right, you say Norwich and Swansea, you're certain they're not going down.
I'm not saying certain.
QPR, different story perhaps for them. They drop into the bottom three now, despite the arrival on the sidelines of Mark Hughes. How did his debut go at the erstwhile St James's Park?
Well, not brilliantly, but I think...
He was quite positive about it, though. Or does he have to be?
He has to be positive. I thought it was very poor. You expect a team playing under a new manager to fire in all cylinders, players are out to impress, and, you know, it's supposed to reinvigorate them. But QPR were, I thought, dire yesterday. They were dirty, cynical, they got beaten, and they seemed to throw in the towel. That the white flag went up after about an hour, and if Hughes thought he was going to have an easy job, I'd say he'll have plenty, yesterday will have given him plenty of food for thought.
He's talking about signing a couple of Brazilians, which I think if you're struggling as QPR are, and they're, because they're, it's not so much they're Brazilians, but they're coming from another league, so they'll take a while to bed down and get used to the pace of Premier League.
I think we all know what you're saying, what the subtext of your conversation is.
Foreigners are lazy, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You can quote me on that.
Right. But this guy, Enrique, isn't he? He's on under 20 talent, you know. Yeah. He's not going to bed in 6 months and keep QPR.
Not in that sense.
Well, yeah, exactly. That, and I think you just need someone. He's more of a signing once you've stayed in the Premier League next season and you're building, I think, at this point, you just want
QPR's something. Biggest problem is goals and strikers.
Yeah.
And they saw that... that chance that they created quite a few half chances yesterday, but they didn't really have anybody to put them away, and the decisiveness wasn't there. That chance that Jay Bothroyd had, when it ball fell to him kind of about 12 yards out, he leaned back, took his time, just did not concentrate on the shot at all, and it just wafted over by about another 10 yards. It was really, you could just see, you'd be screaming, taking your head out if you're the coach.
Newcastle, by contrast, one shot, one goal.
Yeah.
And... you know, this period without Chiotti and Bart starts off pretty well.
Yeah, it starts off. We'll see how long it goes. But, you know, Best came into that 11 motivated rather than sulking, which says something.
Certainly does.
Danny Guthrie was very good. I was very impressed with him filling in for Chiotti.
And Ben Arfa when he came on?
Yes, yeah. Although, from what I've read in an article in The Guardian today, that he apparently is very high maintenance and hard work and thinks the Newcastle team should be built around him, whereas his manager sees him more as an impact sub.
Oh, interesting.
That's his position, isn't it? Just kind of in that hole, and they don't really... They've been playing two strikers up top a lot, Newcastle, and so it doesn't really accommodate Ben Arfa. And if you do change the system to put him in there, then it's almost entirely reliant on him, which means that if he doesn't pull it off, or if he gives the ball away a lot, which sometimes he does, then it might not work. Are you smiling at pull it off?
No, I wasn't.
No? Are you sure about
I wasn't.
That?
I was looking at producer Ben's face, listeners. Ben was staring at this.
Producer Ben was smiling at pull it off.
No, he wasn't, listeners.
Your old mucker Ray Wilkins was in very spiky form during the Newcastle QPR game. I don't know what was wrong, but he seemed to be in a very bad mood. When Johan Caballé went down under a pretty atrocious tackle from Sean Derry, which got Derry a yellow card and possibly should have got him a red, he went down injured and then was so angry he tried to stand up to get stuck into Caballé.
As per Ray's instructions, stay on your feet.
You stay on your feet.
Yeah.
But couldn't because his ankle was too knacked, so he went straight back down. And Ray Wilkins was giving out about him, feigning injury. And even when he was being stretchered off down the tunnel, Wilkins was still giving out about him, faking injury. Why doesn't he just get on with it? And when it became apparent that Caballé was actually quite badly hurt, there was no apology or anything. He then just moved on to a big rant about how long it took the sub to get ready to replace Caballé. Which I agree with him on that one. That really annoys me, how long it takes subs to... Why aren't they wearing their jersey and their shin pads and their boots already?
I don't know, Barry. I really, really don't know.
Sweaty, they get a skin infection, then you're out for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Scrooging from the Hip says, it's QPR Man City on the last day of the season. What odds on relegation and the title race hanging on it with Hughes with a point to prove? I can't see how that would make any difference. Whatever, he can have as many points to prove as he likes. No, but it's
I wouldn't like Mark Hughes. He seems like a decent guy, but...
Does he?
Well, I've met him and he seemed nice.
I've not met him, so... Yeah.
But it's just his agent. I would not like him hanging around my club. Like, and you speak there of South Americans possibly coming to...
That was Tom.
...to QPR. I'm putting two and two together and possibly getting seven or eight, but... Who represents these South Americans, do we know?
Hi, anyway, QPR moving into the bottom three as Blackburn move out. Another big result for Rovers. Oh, right, they only beat Fulham, but they did it with 10 men after Yakubu got the card. And with Christophe Samba out of the lineup, was that one of those inverted commas injuries, or was he genuinely
he was
not?
Sick, inverted
he was
commas.
Sick,
yeah.
Right.
They may as well get used to not having him in
right.
the side. So.
I hear what you're saying. Now, is it okay to feel cheered by this Blackburn Rovers win, or should we be siding with the unfortunate fans who are desperate for a defeat so they can add pressure to Steve Keane? And, you know, is it wrong as well for Venkies, this whole kind of miserable Venkies regime, which further evidence of their mismanagement published in this letter this week? Should we be wishing the whole thing just to go completely down the plug off?
It's funny, isn't it? You kind of end up sympathising with the tenacity of Steve Keane and the fact that the players are willing to stick with him and grind these things out.
The fans as well now seem to have turned the corner.
At least those who are in the ground,
yeah. Yeah, there was nary a boo, I think. Meantime, in India, home of the Venky Group, a fascinating announcement that they're going to have a football Premier League too. You know, you have the fabulously successful Indian Premier League in cricket. Well, they're going to take that model and bring it to football. I think it could work, especially when I read the details. Barry, I forwarded this to you. I don't know if you actually got to read it.
Yes.
Including England World Cupper.
Yeah, well, exactly. You've seen this too. Fabian Cannavaro is going to be one of six icon players for Premier League soccer. I tell you, that's got a ring to it. And that kicks off from February 22nd. Robert Pires, because he did well at Villa last year, I remember. Sorin, Crespo, JJ Okocha, and
Robbie Fowler.
Yeah,
is
World
some
Cup.
Kind of age limit? Like, do you have to be over 50?
I don't know.
Play
the six franchises, good term, will be decided through a tender process. They're going to have world class coaches in Peter Reid, John Barnes, Samson Saizia, Marco Echeverri, Colin Todd, Teitur Todesen.
Teitur Todesen.
I think I've just counted in Swedish or something. I'm not sure. And Milos Roos. And Tony Adams. And John Barnes. Oh, I mentioned him already.
It's Azerbaijan's finest.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. Well, that all starts on February the 25th. So if you're in India, we're going to need a correspondent to cover that. Do get in touch.
Will there be? I mean, is it not going to be? I don't know. I don't want to stereotype. Is it not going to be blazing hot over there?
I don't know.
Are they going to play it at night?
I think it's okay to say it's hot in India without being
being racialist. I just wanted to check.
If you get trouble,
yeah.
Well,
you'll leave me alone. You'll leave me hanging out to dry.
No.
So the cricket, the Indian Premier League cricket, they have an auction and bid for players. So is that how this is going to work?
Yep.
And the players will get ridiculous amounts of money?
Or not, because I can imagine that going very, very badly wrong.
Is it just a very short
season? The phone just not ringing, basically.
So someone could not bid for Robbie Fowler and...
Entirely possible.
He has to go up, yeah.
It's fascinating. If you have more information, listeners, do let us know. Or indeed Indian Premier League soccer people.
Now, producer Ben is just mentioning that this wonderful Indian Premier League will probably have some sort of highlights package on television that will need a well-known presenter.
I don't think... I know where you're heading, Barry, but I just don't think I've got time in my celebrity schedule.
Oh, okay.
All right, then.
I'll just go to Mark Chapman anyway.
No. Take a break, quickly. Play the music, Ben. Good. Now, tell you what, very interesting. Of the top six, only United and Chelsea got wins this weekend with, of course, City still to play. They're going to be at Wigan. Probably will have been at Wigan by the time you hear this, I'm not sure. But should we talk about some of the teams that didn't win, or do you want to talk about United and Chelsea? Up to you guys.
Well,
Tom's in first.
That
what's he going to go with?
Was significant.
Goals.
Is... Liverpool
decided
to start with three centre-backs against Stoke, even though they only had Peter Crouch up front, which was a fairly odd decision.
Right.
Seeing as you'd think...
But it worked. They didn't lose.
They didn't concede at home. That's true. Yeah. But then...
Was that the problem at the other end?
But they didn't score either. Yeah. And in defence of Andy Carroll.
Yes.
Although he took about 5 minutes... changing his studs, which apparently weren't right, and then he fell over anyway. He came on for Downing, and Downing's... The whole point of buying Downing was to supply crosses for Carroll, which just seems...
Isn't the point of that formation that it was about Enrique and Johnson getting forward and putting the ball in? But, you can either play with three at the back, in which case it's an adventurous formation, or you play with five at the back at home against Stoke, in which case it's terminally dull and defeats the purpose.
Yeah. And how he must feel, Carroll, as well, when Kaut was playing up front starting. And for all Carroll's thoughts, Kaut hasn't scored in the Premier League this season, so you're like, well, you're on the bench and a guy who hasn't scored yet has got your place. So it's probably not going to increase his confidence, I'd say.
I was talking with a Liverpool fan friend of mine, and he said, but, you know, We're further on this point in the season than we were last year.
You really ought to know. It's really awful how stereotypes just pervade football at every level. As soon as you mentioned your Liverpool supporting friend, you started doing the calm down gesture.
Did I?
You did.
I thought I was doing Blairite gestures. No, I wasn't. I was doing a scout.
Track-suited.
Sorry, my apologies to Greg Roughly.
Right.
But he was, you know, we're moving on. It's better than we were last year. You can see, you know, we've got a Carling Cup semi-final. We're 1-0 up in. And I was like, bloody hell, if that's the limit of your ambitions when everybody else around you is falling around. And admittedly, Chelsea appear to be able to get 3 points more consistently than Arsenal are doing. But that fourth place is there for the taking for a team that kind of consistently puts a run together. And that was not the ambition that was necessary.
Why did he go with Kaut as opposed to Carroll? What's the rationale behind that? Is it because they are actually thinking of shipping him out in January?
I can't see them shipping him out.
So why else would he have done it?
Maybe to... Well, you'd say maybe to give him a kick up the arse, but he's had quite a few kicks up the arse, so I don't...
Rest him. Yeah.
For the big, City?
Yeah, it's the
semifinal.
Carling. This is what I was saying. You know, we've got the Carling Cup game coming up. So.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Anyway, there you go. That's their seventh draw at home in 11, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All very dull. Hey, Spurs. Well, you kind of knew this was going to happen, didn't you? After the players finally came out and said, yeah, to be fair, we are going to win the title. Oops. Wolves. And Stephen Fletcher. Big thumbs up for Fletch. Does he fit into that category? I know he's been in the Premier League for
ages.
Category. Yeah.
Yeah, of just little-known strikers punching above their weight, I suppose.
Nine goals. Is that right? Has he scored nine? I think he scored nine.
To be fair to Fletcher, I think he is probably the most talented out of that lot.
All right.
I think he is, you know, technically he's a very, when he was, particularly when he was playing for Burnley, he was getting the ball over his shoulder quite a lot. He had a lot of pace and technique. At Wolves, he tends to be more the kind of 6-yard snaffler. But he's doing that well as well.
Cool. He's snaffling well. Good news. All right, then, well, United and Chelsea, then, huh? Chelsea. Because, you know, everyone said about Paul Scholes coming back and blah, 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 they beat Bolton. But what about Chelsea? And Torres, looking a bit better now, now that Didier Drogba's not around?
Looking better. He played well against Sunderland. Was unlucky not to score, and the goal, which fell to Lampard, was, you know, Torres's creation. And
brilliant kick.
It was a fantastic kick. Crashed off the crossbar and just landed at Lampard's feet, and he poked it home. But I thought Sunderland were unlucky not to get anything out of that game. There were a couple of disputed penalty calls. I think both sides had a decent shouts for penalties that weren't given. And Nick Bentner, obviously, was awful. Hmm. I've given up on him.
Really?
Yeah, I've always thought there was a good player inside him sort of waiting to get out, but now I just think he's not very good.
But do you think it's like because he's not talented or it's more his attitude to...
No, I think there's no question he's talented, but he's clearly nowhere near as good as he thinks he is, and I'm not sure. I think if Martin O'Neill can't get the best out of him, then I wonder who will.
So it did look from the highlights as though Sunderland should have maybe taken that game.
Yeah. No, I think so, yeah.
So Chelsea's problems by no means over then.
And they've got Norwich next Saturday.
Who have? Chelsea?
Yeah, which I boldly predict the end of Torres's dry period.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that home or away?
It's away. And according to Chelsea fans, that's much better for them because they operate much better in the space, Ramirez, Mata, etc.
Oh.
Than they get.
Oh, thanks for that, Paul. Cheers. There you go. Now, I think we're done, really. I know we could talk about Aston Villa Everton, or we could just move straight on, Tom, to your big result. And I say big, I mean, well, big, really. 6-0 at the New Den against Millwall, Birmingham.
Yeah. Has there
ever been a greater day to be a Birmingham fan?
When we won the Carling Cup was okay, I suppose.
Was it?
Yeah.
But this is 6-0 away to Millwall.
They did go down to nine men.
Ah.
And they were probably slightly the better side until they had two men sent off.
What was the score when they had the two men sent off?
It was 1-0, I think.
Right.
And we'd actually scored against run of play.
Right.
But then they rather stupidly decided to target Nikola Zigic, which anybody knows you just leave him alone and he'll take care of himself and just wander into a corner and be quiet. But they decided to attack him. Their two sendings were off were attacks on Zigic. We also scored three quite late on, so it put a bit of gloss on the victory. Marlon King was excellent, and this kind of now presents a moral dilemma for Birmingham fans. Do you start liking Marlon King or not?
That is a tricky one, isn't it? You love Chris Hughton, though.
Yes. Everybody loves Chris Hughton. Yeah. Who doesn't like Chris Hughton?
Did your boy Redmond score?
He did. He scored late on, yeah. It wasn't like a brilliant kind of individual goal, which he's capable of, but we're just waiting till we can sell him for $10 million in the summer.
Just but Nathan Redmond, or 18-year-old winger.
Remember the name.
Yeah.
If you're writing the rumour mill
yeah.
and you haven't got anything to say, you just make up a rumour about him going to a big club for $10 million.
All right, pounds. Tom. Your ink-stained fingers have got rumour mill written all over them from this morning. Is that right?
No, Evan Fanning was doing
it. All right, what did he put in? What did he make up?
all of it.
Right, okay, good to know. Don't believe the rumour mills, kids.
A birthday party on Saturday and was chatting to a girl there who had been at the Den. Her employers own a box at the New Den, so she decided to avail of it on that particular day.
Box at the New Den.
But she was saying that it was the most toxic atmosphere she'd ever experienced at a football match.
Right,
in her
until
life.
She went to the party with you, presumably.
No, at a football match.
Ah, sorry, at a football match.
Yeah. I was a perfect gentleman.
Right.
But just that, and the police presence was huge, and Millwall fans not best pleased at getting tonked 6-0 at home by Birmingham.
I've been to a Birmingham Millwall game, and then it's not a nice atmosphere.
Hmm. All right, is there a special rivalry between the two clubs?
They just got horrible fans.
Right.
Both of them.
Both of them, okay.
Certain sections, sorry.
Yeah.
fans.
Yeah, let's not tar everyone with the same big brush. Millwall, of course, just on the edge of the drop zone in the Championship, and you guys just on the edge of the playoff positions.
Yeah, and that's boosted our goal difference as well. I think it's up to, I think it's plus 13 now, and there's quite a few teams on level points or around the same points as us, so that's kind of a big boost as well.
And still I just think the game in hand, haven't you?
What's that?
Still got a game in hand as well?
Yeah, so that'll send us up into the...
If you win it. Yeah, that's the crucial thing there. But, of course, it's topped off by Southampton and West Ham. I'd like to talk about Southampton and their big win away at Nottingham Forest. But luckily, I'll get the chance later with my top media pals, Graham Murty Mertz and Rosie Rossini. Yeah, great.
How's that going?
Well, it's going to start today. So far, so good.
Late kickoff.
Yeah, late kickoff, southwest and west.
Really late.
Yeah, Gary Johnson, Yeovil. Mm. Yeah.
Next stop, Norfolk Digital.
Tell you what, if we weren't enlivened enough by that, Sprouts! Yeah, Barry, you were a bit rude about Sprouts, and
I don't like them. I don't even like
sitting
at a table on which Sprouts are placed.
Yeah, no, apparently it's a genetic thing. Some people just genetically don't like Sprouts. I bet that's true of all tastings. It must always be genetic.
But I saw on the blog post people posting recipes.
Yeah, what, Johnny's Five Eyes?
More palatable.
Yeah, Sauté them in butter with streaky bacon and toss in a few chopped chestnuts.
It's funny how often trying to reclaim unpalatable vegetables involves the addition of bacon.
Bacon, yeah.
Yeah,
but surely that means...
Dandridge, he's got one that doesn't have bacon in it. He says cut them in half, throw some olive oil and a bit of salt on them and roast them. It's not hard, says Dandridge, and they're brilliant.
I used to work in a greengrocer. You'd be surprised how popular Sprouts were. Away from Christmas. They're in the top 10 easily.
Yeah, but how many vegetables did you stock exactly?
Loads and different types. Like, not just mushrooms, but like three different types of mushrooms.
And of all these vegetables, Sprouts were in the top 10 year round, not just at Christmas.
Oh. I mean, Christmas was a boost, but I'd say.
Yeah, that's a tester. You wouldn't have Sprouts in the summer.
Summer it tailed away.
I think that's unfair for Jim to challenge him on that and say all year round. It's natural. It's a seasonal thing.
Seasonal, all right.
They're in the top 10 anyway. That's just vegetables, though. I'm not including fruit.
Right.
They'd be pushed down if it was fruit and vegetable.
But that recipe with the bacon and the chestnuts and the whatever else.
Butter
would surely be much nicer if it was just bacon and chestnuts and butter with no sprouts
or
at all.
Or just bacon and butter. Bubble and Squeak, yeah? No?
Why?
Well, it's lovely. Everyone loves Bubble and Squeak. It's an absolute
I've
good.
I've never had it.
Have you never had Bubble and Squeak?
What is it? Is that the one with the cabbage?
It's whatever vegetables are just kind of refried in butter and stuff. Yes. Tom, what I have to ask, what was the number one then at the greengrocer's?
But bananas, just...
Really?
Yeah, it was a staple.
Bananas?
But it was a fishmonger as well, so...
Right. All right. Okay, now, after that high, here comes Sid Lowe in Spain. Where's the funniest place you ever worked? Apart from here, of course, because it's crazy.
The funniest
place? Yeah, what's the strangest job you ever had? Come on, Sid Lowe.
I don't think I've had any particularly strange ones. I've lectured in history before, which was entertaining, but I don't think I've had any strange ones.
Where?
I did a course on Southern European fascism. Yeah. My favourite moment was we were doing, obviously, the course consisted of these things normally do, of lectures followed by kind of seminar groups. In a seminar group, we were going through the practicalities of how a military coup happens. And so we did this thing where I said, right, imagine I come in the room and I try and take you over, and how do you respond depending on certain circumstances. And for some reason, we went through a series of scenarios, and then I stood by the door and said, okay, imagine now that I'm, and I was trying to think of the word, and someone from the back of the class shouted out, a wanker? And instead of getting angry, I nearly pissed myself laughing, as you can probably imagine.
Where was this, Sid?
This was at Barnsley College.
Oh, right. Ooh. Fair enough,
which
then.
Was part of a degree, a history degree that was kind of run out of the University of Sheffield.
Right, okay, cool. There you go, eh? There you go. Now, in Liga news, Sid, Big Two had a rough weekend, didn't they? But they still came through ahead of that big Clásico showdown. Tell us more.
Yeah. Real Madrid went to Mallorca and Barcelona were at home against Betis, and both of them really struggled in slightly different ways. Real Madrid were 1-0 down against Mallorca and came back into it and won 2-1 with a goal from Higuain and one from Callejon. Barcelona were a similar-ish situation. They played against Betis 2-0 up, back to 2-2 and really struggling. And in the end, they won 4-2.
Oh, but it's the first time anyone scored at the Camp Nou in 9 months, apart from the home side.
Yeah, first league goals that Barcelona conceded at home all season. And Betis were great as well, because a lot of teams who done well against Barcelona, or at the very least the teams who felt like had done well, got draws, for example, that 0-0 against Sevilla. Teams have basically come and parked the bus, or parked two or three of them. Betis really went for Barcelona. I think they showed that if you put pressure on Barcelona high up and you get at those players who aren't quite so good at bringing the ball out and maintaining possession, in particular because Piqué wasn't playing, then you can actually cause Barcelona some problems.
All right. Now, Barcelona facing Real Madrid in the first leg of the quarter-final of the Copa del Rey this midweek. I bet everyone's very excited about that.
They'd be even more excited, James, if it was the final, but yeah, it's the quarter-final.
Yeah. Still, you know.
Yeah, they are excited.
In a sense, it is, though, I bet.
There is a very... Yeah, I think it is. I think certainly it's being looked at like that from a lot of people. There's a very slight sense of I don't know if I'd call it boredom. I don't think it's quite boredom, but of sort of tiredness of the Clásicos, because there's been so many of them. Bear in mind, of course, the season started with two Clásicos in the Supercopa. It had last year the Copa del Rey final and the two games in the Champions League. I think I saw a statistic the other day that said that there's been 9 Clásicos in 10 months. I'm not sure if that's right. I'm trying to think now. But it's around that. And that once these two are out of the way, of course. And there is a very slight feeling of, we could have kind of done without this. And Casillas said the other day, what was the phrase he used? He said, when there's a lot of something... Oh, there goes the dog. When there's a lot of something, it bores you, and when there's a little of something, it enamours you. And what he obviously meant was there's too much Clásico. There's
too
a bit
much
of Clásico fatigue. And he described it as decaffeinated when the teams face each other too often. And, of course, this is back to that long, long debate and the issue that keeps on coming up of Spain being the new Scotland. And, of course, one of the problems that Scotland has is that Celtic and Rangers play each other far too often.
Right, and the weather.
Even that game loses some of its sort of sense of occasion.
Right. The food as well, that's another issue. Excellent stuff. Sid, that's brilliant. We look forward to getting your view on the first leg of the Copa etc. Decaffeinated Cup on Thursday.
Yeah, there's some I think no one's really talked about on the Copa del Rey, by the way, James.
Yes.
A tactical thing, so you can switch off now if you want.
Right.
Which is, everybody's talking about the various permutations and will Madrid play with Pepe in midfield and so on and so forth. And no one's talking about something that I think is really quite significant, although, you know, not fundamental, which is that Barcelona will be playing with their second choice goalkeeper.
Mm.
Now, Guardiola has faced Mourinho, I think I'm right in saying, 9 times, only lost one of them, and it happened to be the one when Victor Valdes wasn't playing.
I understand. And it's Pinto in there, is it?
It's Pinto, yes.
Yeah, with the funny hair.
Funny hair. He owns a kind of a, I don't know what you call it. Oh, I suppose you'd really call it a record company.
Yeah.
He kind of supports rappers down in the south of Spain.
I've seen some of his work, actually, or some of his protege's work.
Do you like it, James?
Yeah, very much. Very, very much. Anyway, Sid, that's great. We might play in a bit on Thursday, or not, depending on how he plays. Interesting.
Yeah, if he has a good game, maybe we'll get some of his whackamations or whatever it's called. Whackamations, I think they're called, or whackinations.
I don't know.
And stick it in.
Well, all right then. Super. Thanks, Sid.
Okay, and you. Cheers.
Cheerio. Well, if you thought that was the end of today's Football Weekly, you thought wrong, friend. The Milan derby happened last night, didn't it, Paul?
It most certainly did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you saw the second half.
I saw the second half. Sorry, yeah. I didn't see the first half.
That's all
right. I was making a curry. But the second half,
yeah,
it was like going back to 2010, wasn't it? It was all the way back to that majestic defensive unit,
yeah,
of
it was like
Mourinho's
yeah.
Internazionale.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because it was a sort of Mourinho-esque performance. They were very compact, hit them on the break. And I tell you what, you say it's like going back to 2010. But have a look at these two photos here, listeners. Can you see... there's the goal from last night with Abate, the Milan right back, and he's basically just let Diego Milito through, having failed to control a pass.
Terribly.
And Milito scores. This picture here, what's that? It's like 5 seconds later, is it? Same players and Milito's a little bit further on. No, that's from 2 years ago when he did the exact same thing, Aparte. Look at the photos, identical, and handed into the win that time too.
It's like the Daily Mail's obsession with that picture of Gareth Bale kicking the ball over his head. They did a whole spread last week of people who've kicked the ball over their head. That's going to get cut, isn't it?
But no, I'm fascinated.
Gareth Bale did this kick in their last win where he did an overhead kick, but he didn't take his lower leg off the ground. He just kicked.
Oh, right, yeah.
In a act of magnificent gymnastics, kicked right above his head. Wow. And the Mail became obsessed with this, partly because it looked a bit weird.
Yeah, tantric, probably.
Yes, exactly. And they had kind of like a spread of other people having kicked their legs over their heads in history.
Who else?
Oh, you know, gymnasts, essentially.
And, oh, right, okay.
And chimps. But coincidentally. But yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? And then Milan, for all their huffing and their puffing, well, there was a couple of times when they Pato stood on somebody else's toe and Kevin Prince-Boateng did a completely needless dummy.
Yeah. And El Shaarawy looked good when he came on in the final.
Yes, what, he did.
10 minutes or so.
What's his, where's he? Is he a youth?
But he's, yeah, there was a lot of comment about that today, the fact that he shouldn't have gone with Pato. That was the thing that some commentators felt, that there was been a bit too much chat around Milan. Last week, there was a big thing of Pato's going to PSG and he doesn't get on with Allegri. And then Pato turned down the PSG move and then Allegri the next day signs a new deal as well. So it was all this kind of new spirit of harmony. And a lot of people felt that's what influenced Allegri's decision to stick Pato in the starting lineup rather than, say, Robinho, who'd improved the team in their previous game at Atalanta. Yeah. And I don't think Pato had a particularly good performance when he was taken off. Whistles from the San Siro crowd. Whistles. Anyway, the extraordinary thing is that Inter now won six in a row, and from having been all the way down in 15th in December, they are now 6 points off the top.
It's a bit of an Arsenal, that, though, isn't it?
Do you think?
Yeah,
I
mean, because the Tinker Man is not particularly renowned for closing the deal, is he?
Well, yeah, but yeah, there's always a first time.
That's true.
There's always a first time.
There is.
Who knows? But anyway, Milan slipping, and that meant good news, of course, for... That's 9 points he's made up in 40 days, by the way. 9 points in 40 days. Very
well
good.
Well done, Claudio Ranieri.
Very well done. And Diego Milito is another comeback man because he couldn't buy a goal. Now he's scored in the last three. And Milan slipping behind Juventus at the top, who themselves were held to a disappointing draw by Cagliari. If you're interested in Roberto Donadoni, are you interested in Roberto Donadoni?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, he took over the Parma job. They got beaten 5-0 by Inter in Inter's previous game. And they won 3-1 against Siena. How about that? Are you interested in Cersei Cosmi? Who?
Yes.
All right, Cersei Cosmi, he's the gonk-like figure who many people remember from the golden days of Perugia when they had Nakatar and that kind of thing. And he's a beefy chap with kind of a lot of facial hair and not much on top. And he... goatee.
Like yourself, so.
Yeah, but beefier. And in a very, very, very tight suit that looks as though he's then washed at a high temperature so it shrunk even further. He's basically stuffed into this ill-fitting suit. And he's a tremendous chap. He once gave me pizza. So that's thumbs up over here. And he's now taken over at Lecce, who are bottom of the table, but despite that, beat Fiorentina this weekend, causing about 500 Fiorentina fans to actually lay siege to the stadium so the players couldn't get out. And there was some unpleasantness in the director's box too. And basically the players were stuck in there for about 2 hours and then a delegation of fans was led in to discuss the fact that the players should try harder, etc. And Cersei Cosmi says, I'm a bit worried when the fans behave like this because, says Cersei, usually they do this when they realise that they've lost against a really rubbish team. So that's his concern. This means Lecce aren't very good. Sorry.
Just Paul. Quickly, James.
Yeah.
Tevez.
Yes.
Internationale. Will it?
I don't know. I think every day it changes. It looks like PSG might now again be the hot favourites for that. But Milan, I wouldn't rule them out because clearly their gambit here is to say, oh, well, then we're not going to do that if you're not going to take him on loan. Hope nobody else comes in for him and that City are desperate in a week or two's time and then they can get the advantageous deal that they usually seem to get. Anyway, Fiorentina losing there. And the other thing I should mention, really, Palermo, the exciting team from the Sicilian capital, who, of course, fired Stefano Pioli at the start of the season and then brought in... That chap Manja, you remember him?
Manja.
Yeah, and then Bartolo Muti came in, and now 3 games later, apparently they're thinking of bringing back Manja for the next move, and then this one could run and run.
How did they Manja that?
Oh! Don't know. Anyway, Barry, is that a question forming on your lips?
Can I go now, please? It can be, if you want. Is it Did I see somewhere that Paolo Maldini is off to PSG in some capacity?
He says, I feel at home there. I don't know if he's actually signed a deal. Does anyone know more on that?
Was this to play or to be a coach?
I suspect not, Barry. I suspect not.
Leonardo.
But he's, you know, the Maldinis are Milan through and through. Cut them and they bleed black and blue. Oh, no, red and blue.
Unfortunately, they bleed.
Red and blue. Red and blue. Red and black. Right.
They bleed anyway.
They bleed, that much. So it's a bit of a shock if he's off to PSG. Where's this going to end?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
In about 18 months.
But you're supposed to know. That's why
I know. Oh, well. Anyway, that's it. We're going to be back on Thursday, as I'm sure you know. Many thanks for now, though, to producer Ben, Paul McInnes, Barry Glendening and Tom Lutz. Have a super week. We'll catch up with you in the Extra Show on Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.